Welcome to the SDG Talks podcast. Today, we're diving into the Wisconsin Water Week, hosted April 8th through 12th in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Today, we're joined with Eric Olson, the director of Extension Lakes College of Natural Resources. Eric's going to cover the origin story and importance of Wisconsin Water Week, some of his past experience at the show, and exciting plans for 2024. You'll get some idea around the format and the schedule of the show, and some great insights into why we cannot take our water for granted and why we must be proactive to protect our beloved Wisconsin waters. Enjoy the show. Well, today we got Eric Olson, the director of Extension Lakes College of Natural Resources. Eric, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Kevin. Thanks for having me on.
So where in the world are you located today?
We are sitting on the campus of the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point. And if you were to use your hand as sort of a reference of the state of Wisconsin, with your thumb being Door County on Lake Michigan, Stevens Point is your middle knuckle. We're right there in the center of the state of Wisconsin, kind of like a geographic middle of the state. We sit on the Wisconsin River, which is a tributary of the Mississippi River and goes all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico.
That's awesome. Well, my wife is from Michigan, and she's always doing on the other side of her hand, talking about where she's from in Michigan. But, you know, we in Wisconsin, we can do the same. We just flip the hand around.
Pretty much. Yep.
So I had the fortune of attending the Wisconsin Water Week and going to Stevens Point for the first time last year. I am a proud University of Wisconsin Badger alum, but love all Wisconsin school system. But was just really impressed and inspired by everything that happened there, and just so excited for what's happening in 2024. But I know you've been with the organization and the show really since the origin. And I'd love to kind of hear sort of the origin story of Wisconsin Water Week and the whole Lakes initiatives that you lead. So if you could paint a little picture on sort of some of the origin story, I'd love to get a bit deeper into that.
Yeah, I'd like to claim that I was here at the origin. And I guess in some ways I was, because I was born in 1972. And right around that same time was when Wisconsin was coming up with some innovative lake management frameworks, different than what maybe some other states had been doing, and trying to really build off of this idea of collaboration around natural resource management. So when we think about 2024, what we're celebrating this year is the 50th anniversary of a law that was signed in 1974 to allow for people around lakes in Wisconsin to form new local governments that would allow them to tax themselves. Sounds like it wouldn't be popular, but to tax themselves to pay for taking care of their lakes. And this was just born out of research showing that if we don't intervene in our lakes in Wisconsin, if we don't do something proactive in terms of either fixing problems or preventing problems, then these lakes were going to go downhill. Our water resources in Wisconsin are extremely valuable, but they're also vulnerable, just like all around the world, I think. Our water resources are vulnerable to different threats. And if you're in a state like Wisconsin, where there's, by some measures, just thousands of lakes, the vulnerability and the challenge there can be daunting. It's easy for people to, I think, throw up their hands and say, this is too hard. This is too much work. I don't think we can do it. And in Wisconsin, I think in the Midwest in general, people just aren't that easily defeated. People like to say, well, wait a minute, tell me what the challenge is like. Let's see if we can figure this out. And in Wisconsin, it was this notion that these lakes and our river resources, we consider them public trust resources. They're owned by everyone collectively. You, myself, all the people of Wisconsin own these lakes. And we hire the state government to take care of them on our behalf. That's what it means to place them in trust, is to give the government the responsibility to take care of them. And the government looked at this problem and said, well, you know, for us as a state government to take care of these thousands of lakes, that's going to be expensive. It's going to cost way more than you, the owners, are willing to pay probably. And so we said, well, why don't we split the bill? Why don't we cut up the expense a little bit in different ways? And what if local people, especially shoreline property owners, agreed to pay some of the way? What if they could tax themselves? So that's where that came out of, was this idea that local people really want to do stuff, especially if you're fortunate enough to own shoreline property, you're willing to do things, to spend money and to volunteer your time to take care of that lake. So this just formalized how they could do it. And within a few years, a couple dozen, up close to 100 of these lake districts had formed. We sort of estimated correctly that if given the ability to tax themselves to take care of lakes, local folks would do that. They stepped up and started forming these lake districts. And it wasn't that they were going to tax themselves completely to pay for the lake, but it was to share in the cost, to join in with the state of Wisconsin and split the bill. So that was sort of these were the early years, 1970s. And what they realized right away, though, was that people aren't going to, just citizen volunteers, probably aren't going to navigate this law completely on their own. They need help. And the Department of Natural Resources in Wisconsin said, well, let's work with the university then. Why don't we contract Extension, which is our statewide outreach program, to help citizens navigate this law, because otherwise it might be too complicated. So my predecessor's predecessor was a gentleman named Lowell Klesick. And we'll talk about Lowell quite a bit today, I think. Lowell had just completed his PhD in the early 1970s, and he was hired to help do that job for the university, to connect with hundreds of lake organizations. And he was really well suited to do this because his dissertation was about lake organizations in Wisconsin and what their challenges were. And so he took on this task and just ran with it. And he started holding meetings all around the state of Wisconsin in the mid-1970s to explain to people what the Lake District Law meant and how they could implement it. And in the late 1970s, I think he was getting a little tired of traveling quite so much to go to all the different parts of Wisconsin. For people who aren't aware, it's a big state. To go from one end of the state to the other in a car at that time, especially, was maybe a 9-hour drive. So you'd have to maybe spend a day just traveling to get somewhere, and then you would have your meetings. He asked the Lake District people that had formed at that point, should we get together in one place? Should we have a statewide conference of Lake District people and Department of Natural Resources and federal EPA people instead of having Lowell travel all over the state? And they responded and said, yeah, let's do that. He basically formalized this question out to people, mailed them a survey, and they came back and said, yeah, let's do it. Let's start meeting. And so in the late 1970s and the early 1980s, that's when this conference really got started. The idea that all across the state of Wisconsin, lake stakeholders could gather in a single place and share and learn from each other.
I love that. I mean, it is truth. If you build it, they will come. And especially when you're bringing together a lot of like-minded individuals within the state of Wisconsin that want to protect the most precious thing, which is our surface water, which is our lakes. And it's really the backbone, in my opinion, of Wisconsin's identity is the beautiful wildlife and the nature and the biodiversity. And you touched on a lot of things there, from one, just the idea of taxing, which is fascinating in the sense of wanting to be taxed. But it is true where we all need to do our fair share in terms of protecting vulnerable watersheds. I mean, sometimes if you leave it alone, it'll take care of itself. But at the same time, we do face a lot of different threats. We face a lot of, whether it's from invasives, whether it's from changing temperatures, whether it's from just boating safety. I mean, there's 100 little things that create threats, which is why it is important to convene everyone and bring people together to talk about these challenges and best practices. And with that, like, what's the point of Wisconsin Water Weeks now? And what's like, why must it exist? And why is it important that we get together, especially considering that, I mean, it's a lot of resources and effort to get together, but why, in your opinion, like, why is it happening? And what's sort of the important things that we really need to urgently address in 2024?
Yeah. So those are great questions. And especially in light of the recent climate conferences taking place over in the Middle East, you know, those are resource intensive. This conference is not quite so resource intensive, but it still requires a lot of time and effort to plan and to pull off. And you can step back and say, well, is this worth it? What are we getting out of this? Unlike the climate conferences, we aren't necessarily trying to come to consensus on anything. We're just gathering really to learn and to share what we have learned with other people. And a lot of times that does involve face-to-face conversations, because it involves, I think, a little bit of trust. And why does it involve trust? Because sometimes if we're sharing what we've learned, we're sharing some bad experiences sometimes, mistakes that we've learned from that we're trying to share with other people so that they don't have to learn from the same mistakes that we made. And trying to do that in written reports or trying to do that in phone conversations just doesn't always work out. If you're in a room with a lot of people, I think we can be honest with each other and say what's worked and what hasn't worked, and then see if people, what you really want to do is prevent other people from repeating the same mistakes you made. They shouldn't have to relearn the wheel, you know, they shouldn't have to reinvent the wheel. They should be able to sort of build off of where you've gotten. And again, in Wisconsin, with so many lakes, you know, they're not all the same, but a lot of them are very similar. And so what didn't work on another lake, maybe that's probably not going to work on your lake too. You just need to hear someone explain what they went through and how they got there. And similarly, if somebody's found something that does work, you want to hear it from them as well. There also has to be time, and this happens everywhere in terms of these these big conferences, time for people to ask their questions, to dig a little bit deeper. And again, some people, there's some vulnerability and trust there. It's easy to say there's no such thing as a stupid question, but I think people do sometimes stop asking questions because they think it's going to come across as stupid, or they're going to paint themselves as naive just by asking the question. And so being in a big, fun social gathering allows you that vulnerability to ask questions that might sound naive. Whereas on a big online teleconference, for example, people might not take that risk. They sit back and they don't ask those questions. So we have to get together in person to share those experiences and to ask those questions. And that's what drives us to do this year after year.
Yeah. And that was one thing I really loved with attending for the first time last year. Just really good, positive energy of like-minded individuals that live a life of purpose to support Wisconsin water. And yeah, to me, it was infectious in a good way to share these ideas. And like you said, of how can we cast a spotlight on best practices? How can we learn from other people's mistakes? There's no real competition amongst the different watersheds. I mean, we all want each other to win. And that was one thing I really liked. That was sort of the feeling that I got from last year that was my biggest takeaway, which was also inspiring for me as I'm on the board of directors for my lake association, the Elkhart Lake Improvement Association, Keep Elkhart Blue. And we're starting to navigate, what do we do next? I mean, we have a strong member base, we have a strong volunteer board, but we do face threats of runoff. We do face that threats of invasives. We do face some boater safety concerns. These are all dynamics where we're navigating it, and our president, John Schott, and some of the other members have done a good job working within the organization, but we need to learn from others and we need to apply best practices. And so that to me was one of the biggest takeaways, and I'm excited about it. And I'd love to kind of rephrase that to you as far as some of your past experiences and some of your most memorable moments. I mean, I've only been to one. You've been to a few.
Yeah.
What are some of the most memorable experiences or moments that you've had at Wisconsin Water Week?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking and reflecting back. So I think my first conference that I went to was probably in the early 2000s, like 2001, the Lakes Conference, and now it's evolved into Water Week. And so I have a lot to look back and think about. I do think that we had this really great year that where stars seem to align for us. And I know you had some of my colleagues on here talking a bit about Jay Nichols and the idea of Blue Mind, but we actually went even further that year, and it just culminated a couple of different things. I mentioned Lowell Klesig, and he got this ball rolling. He was sort of one of the godfathers of what we call the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership, and he was the person who traveled all over the state. He passed away just before a conference, and it turns out that he died of what's called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is a rare brain disorder. It's similar to basically mad cow disease in humans. And so your brain begins to sort of fall apart. And it was really took a toll on him. He had work that he wanted to complete in retirement, but he was unable to do it because his brain was failing. But one of the things he did is he started working on his own memoir that he wanted to tell a story. And his story was actually a story of mental health challenges throughout his life. Even from a teenager, he knew he was sort of chemically imbalanced, and that he struggled with manic depressive disorder or bipolar disorder, and that throughout his life he was medicated in order to deal with it. But he was passionate about water. He was passionate about canoeing, about recreating near water. He was passionate about teaching people about water and convening these conferences and trying to solve problems around water. But he struggled, and he struggled in sort of isolation. He didn't open up and share with other people what he was going through. So it was a surprise. It was after his death, everyone started learning about this, and it recast how you think about Lowell and his work, you know, that he was manic, and it explained why he could drive across the state and go to meetings was because he was probably in a sort of an upswing at those times. And then he had his down times as well. Well, around that same time that we were talking about Jay Nichols, there was a gentleman from the UK, a writer, and his name was, now I got to look it up, Andrew Peters. And he had written a book called Dip. And his book was about his own mental health challenges and how just getting into water to swim every day actually saved his life. He's one of those people who, like, if he hadn't gotten in the water, if he hadn't basically started to have his own therapeutic experiences in waterways, he probably wouldn't be with us today. So Andrew Fusick Peters wrote this book called Dip. And I said, well, wait a minute, if we're going to bring in Jay Nichols, we got to bring in this guy as well. He's, even though he lives in the UK, let's figure this out. And at the same time that this was happening, we were connecting more and more strongly with a group out of Wisconsin called Northwest Passage. And they're located, as you can imagine, in Northwest Wisconsin. And they work with youth who are in trouble for one reason or another. They have their own mental challenges, or they've had run-ins with the law. And so it's a residential school that helps you both stay on track academically, but also address your issues. And we had been hearing from them that they had this amazing underwater photography program that was helping kids really solve their own problems, helping them balance their brain and reframe how they're looking at the world. They were combining underwater photography and poetry and doing these sort of great artworks, you know, that were being now published into books out of Northwest Passage. And I said, well, why, if we're going to bring Andrew Fusick Peters over from the UK to come to our conference, that's a high, you know, that's a high investment of time and energy. Why wouldn't we try to connect him even further with Northwest Passage and with these kids so that he could talk about his struggles and he could share his work? And lo and behold, it turns out that Andrew had also not only taken to swimming regularly and connecting with water, but he had found passion in photography. Like, he now is an award-winning published regularly photographer in the UK. And so why not have him bring over his kit and go out with these kids and be able to talk about sort of what you get mentally out of going out and photographing, taking photos of water and being around water that way. So he got to come to our conference then at the end of the conference and talk about his Dip book, his own experiences. He read some poetry and reflected on sort of his own life. And I just think of, like, the participants in that conference, if they got, they think what they got to hear was Jay Nichols talk about Blue Mind. They got to hear actually someone from Northwest Passage talk about their photography program. And they got to hear from Andrew Fusick Peters talk about how waters are so important to saving our mental health sometimes. That type of impact you don't get, I think, just by reading articles and watching videos. You get that by being in a room with these people as they share their vulnerabilities and talk about what's changed in their life. And at that event, when the gentleman, his name was Ben from Northwest Passage, when Ben got to share the videos and the photos from the kids, in the audience was Lowell's widow and Lowell's son, who also struggles with mental health challenges. They got to be in that room. And I just, when I look back, I'm like, that's just amazing that we were able to sort of present this forum of ideas and conversations with an audience that probably really needed to hear this now, and to know that Lowell and his life is going to live on in this legacy of Wisconsin Water Week and these convenings that I can envision happening still for the next 50 years.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, shout out to Lowell. That was my first time hearing about him, and I'm excited to learn more and dive in. I'm just so grateful for you, Lowell, I mean, your legacy, and Andrew Peters, and then of course, Wallace J. Nichols, who we've both had the fortune of getting to know. And I was saying, when I read his book, which is, this is the 10-year anniversary, Jay's book, Blue Mind, the study about why humans are happier, healthier, more productive when we're on, in, near, on water, changed my life. I was always knew I was a water person, but didn't really understand that kind of, it was more than just water. It was this kind of spiritual connection. And there's so much of this value in terms of the water as medicine, not only just water as life, but water as therapy and surfing therapy, kayak therapy, fishing therapy. You don't realize how good you feel. It's sort of this kind of takes over, but there's a lot of this science behind all the human water connection. And I'm really grateful for Jay for casting a spotlight on that. And this is a little bit of a teaser. We're also working on a 10-year Blue Mind in Action white paper document that's going to be not just a document that's created that creates this, it has dust sitting on it, but a document of action and aggregating how Blue Mind has been mobilized. And speaking to the Wisconsin Water Week, it's it's a little bit of everything. It's how do we manage invasive species? What are we doing with surface water runoff? What are we doing for boater safety? How are we approaching utilizing our lakes as a safe place for people to enjoy and allow it to be used for different youth programs to go fishing or take photos? And to me, that's my DNA. That's what I love. And that's what I'm here for and so excited about. And I just appreciate you sharing all that. And I'd love to kind of get some of your thoughts with upcoming 2024. I know some of the speaker schedules is still flushing out. We're hoping to have more of some of the agenda locked down here. And shout out to Sarah and Amy and the entire team that are really just working tirelessly to make that happen. What are you excited about for 2024?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the things that's been developing in Wisconsin sort of as a trend has actually been working with farmers and agricultural communities to sort of replicate what we've accomplished with lake associations. And so lake associations, unlike lake districts, lake associations are just nonprofit groups around the state. You mentioned you're on the board of your local one, and they sort of do membership and fundraisers, and they try to solve problems, you know, in between state budgets and in between local government budgets. They're just in there as these nonprofits. And what we're creating in Wisconsin, it's based on an Iowa model, are what we call farmer-led watershed councils or producer-led watershed councils. And think of them as like lake associations for farmers in a watershed, where maybe their target is not necessarily the lake, but throughout Wisconsin, there are thousands of streams and rivers. And all this farmland, eventually the runoff from snowmelt and the runoff from rain events, courses into these rivers and streams, and then it becomes impounded in big water bodies like Lake Peatonwell and Castle Rock in the middle of the state, or it moves through different areas like the Yahara chain of lakes in Madison, Wisconsin. These farmers, they care and they understand some of this stuff, but they also need to get together with each other and collaborate and try and learn from each other. And what we're going to try and do is engage some of those producer-led groups, the citizen farmers, to come to our conference and see what we're up to here, what we're doing, and see if they can steal some ideas from us. But we're also going to be inviting some of them to present and share some of what they're working on in producer-led watershed groups. And I think that's going to be a sort of an evolution from this year and going forward. We actually have had some conversations around this at previous conferences, but we can tell that this is building. That 50 years ago, the Lakes Partnership was sort of just getting started. And today we're at the very early stages of all these producer-led watershed groups. And so if we can form relationships, if we can foster collaborations between people that are doing work on the landscape with the people that are focused on their waterway, that might be a pathway for us to really address one of the really hard challenges around water planet-wide, which is that polluted runoff challenge. Some technical people might call it non-point source pollution, but other people just think of it as polluted runoff. It's water coursing across the land, ending up in streams and rivers, and then eventually coming into impoundments or bays. We have been trying to do some work around that as a citizenry for maybe 70, 80 years, identifying that this is an issue, but it's a really hard issue. It's one that doesn't just lend itself to easy, simple technical solutions because it involves the entire landscape and it involves ecological management and trying to manage farmland in such a way that it doesn't yield excess nutrient and sediment runoff or polluted runoff. And boy, nowhere have they really just solved this. And so we know it's a difficult challenge and it's going to take decades.
Eric, that's so awesome to hear. And that's a big initiative that we're doing at Elkhart Lake is engaging with all the private landowners and all the different farmers and everyone within the watershed, because we are all connected. But I think one of the challenges in the past has maybe been sort of pointing the finger, being like, you're the problem or you're causing it. But the way that I want to reframe it, and I'd love your thoughts of how do we make the farmers the hero of this story? I mean, we need the farmers and the farmers need the watershed, but obviously there is these concerns of these non-point source pollution issues. And it still hasn't been figured out, but from what I know, there's like 100 little things you can do to alleviate these challenges. It's not going to maybe solve it 100%, but there are little things you can do. And it's a lot about continuing to build these partnerships and build relationships within the watershed. And just to dive a bit deeper there on that sort of alignment with all the stakeholders within the watershed, what are some maybe ideas or thoughts or storytelling or tactics or any other suggestions around that conversation.
Sure. So it comes back to what we talked about earlier, being able to share both your successes as well as things that didn't work out so well. They're only tragic mistakes if you don't learn from them, right? They're only tragedies if you don't apply that knowledge then and share it with other people. So we do want to hear from groups that have been trying to foster these partnerships with farmers and people in the watershed. Part of what we can do is celebrate those. So last year we gave an award to a citizen who's part of one of those big water bodies in the middle of the state on the Wisconsin River. His name is Rick Georgeson, and he was recognized because he has gone out of his way to connect with the farmers in his watershed. Their watershed is vast. It's like the northern one-third of Wisconsin. So it's a huge challenge for him. But he's made these personal connections with farmers. And I was just at an event yesterday. It was the Farmers of the Mill Creek Watershed. It's in central Wisconsin, again, right by the knuckle there on your finger or on your hand. And Rick was there again. You know, he just shows up. He's retired. He's probably in his 70s. But he'll take the time out to go to the farmer group and their meeting just to be present and just to answer questions. So we want that same level of engagement at the statewide level. You know, why don't we invite the leaders of these watershed groups to come and just hear what we're up to and maybe even feature some of them. I think in the future, you'll see us featuring more stories from those producer-led watershed groups. And I think over time, you know, if last year we gave the award to Rick for being a partnership builder, I hope in the future we're giving an award to a farmer who's partnership builder, who's gone above and beyond. And maybe that farmer was nominated for the award by the local lake group who recognized, like, wow, right in our backyard, we've got this amazing person who's just been trying to knock down barriers and solve problems and really bridge together the lake community and the farming community in innovative ways. We know there's people out there like that. So we're hoping that in the future, we can really celebrate their successes and hold them up as role models for other farmers around the state to say, wow, they don't get just sort of trashed on or finger pointed. They instead get celebrated and they get heralded and shared statewide. So I can see that in our future. And part of what we've been evolving, Wisconsin Water Week, even why we call it Wisconsin Water Week, is that this isn't just about lakes. This isn't just about an Elkhart Lake or a Lake Geneva. This is increasingly a conversation about watersheds, about rivers and streams, how that water gets to the lake, what's happening on the land. Every lake is a reflection of the landscape around it, and we have to really embrace that concept and demonstrate it in what we talk about. So yes, we'll talk about in-lake water technology, we'll talk about in-lake invasive species, but that's also going to be balanced by stuff happening around the lake, watersheds and rivers and streams.
And expand upon that a little bit more with the format. I know when I got there, it was Thursday, they have some of these sort of smaller breakout rooms where there's maybe someone that's talking for an hour-long presentation, or it's some sort of lightning talks that are 5 minutes, and then there's some keynote stuff. But just for the overall format and sort of what to expect, could you paint a little bit of a picture around that?
Yeah, so let me couch it in a bigger sandwich here. The bigger sandwich is Wisconsin Water Week, and that's meant to be sort of a time on the calendar where people can plan all sorts of water events around. And we'd invite people to think about different ways in their local communities they could do something in Wisconsin that's water focused during Water Week, and we would help promote that. And then our conference itself really falls on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of Water Week. And those days of the week have sort of worked out for us historically. We used to have this event that would go into Saturdays, or we used to do it earlier in the week. But really, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday gives us a nice solid vibe, I guess, of a way for people to close out their work week. And on Wednesday, we focus on just these half-day workshops, which are much more intensive, sort of smaller classroom size, if you will. And people register for those ahead of time, so they know what they're kind of getting into. And the teachers of the workshops know ahead of time who's going to come to those sessions. And they're really sort of like intensive training experiences for people. Those are going to happen both on Wednesday in the morning, Wednesday in the afternoon, and then also Friday afternoon. So we have another sandwich, another layer of the sandwich, if you will. It's bookended by workshops on Wednesday and workshops on Friday afternoon. And then in between that is all the glorious stuff that you're talking about, the middle of the sandwich of just a smorgasbord, really, of different sessions, concurrent sessions that are happening, plenary sessions where we get everybody in the room together to have sort of a keynote type panel, the meals in between too, to keep you fed and sustained so that you can enjoy this conference. And then scattered in that is time to interact with your fellow conference goers, as well as exhibitors, professionals and educators who are sharing information at exhibit tables and demonstrating maybe the technology that they've developed and they want to share, or talking about the types of projects that they can help people out. There's lots of consultants and private service providers. So there's time for interacting with them in sort of the exhibition areas. That part becomes such a frenzy. It's sort of like people get the agenda because there's these multiple concurrent sessions. You really have to choose your own adventure or map out which room are you going to go to. And for people that haven't gone to conferences before, which are a lot of our people, we get new people who've never, conferences and conventions and trade shows is not their background, but now they're a volunteer in their lake association. They come to this conference and they realize, like, wow, this is all exciting. All these different options that I can pick from. A lot of times they're upset because there are two things at the same time that they want to go to. And my answer to them is always like, well, that's why you come back next year. You have to come back next year because some of this content gets repeated year after year, or sometimes it's the same topic, but different presenters, different people sharing on the topic. But there's always a reason to come back. So we always get a good amount of both new people at the conference as well as returning customers. So that's how I would convey it. And you'll be able to see online, even a preliminary schedule will show you there's an awards banquet that takes place Thursday night. There's a reception on Wednesday night. It's a combination of just fun and camaraderie and intense learning and questions and answers.
Get your popcorn ready. It's going to be a good time.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it. And what are the exact dates again?
10th, 11th, and 12th of April, I believe. I want to kick myself if I get that wrong. But it's basically that second week of April is Water Week. So even before the Wednesday, if folks wanted to do local events, we'd love to help highlight those. Or if people even want to do local events on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, we'd love to share those with other people. What we realize is that this conference can't be everything to everyone, that some people can't travel or don't want to travel. So there has to be other ways for people to learn about water and to explore water. And we want to just support those things and support other people doing local programming. Wisconsin, like we've mentioned a couple times, it's a big state with a lot of lakes. So there's no way that 3 days in Stevens Point is going to cover everything. There's a lot more ground to be covered. And we'd encourage people to think about ways they could do something locally. Maybe it's at your local library. Maybe you have a reading group. Take a look. One of the things that Jay Nichols does that's great is sort of gets a group of people together to read Blue Mind and to think about how that applies to their own community. People could do that. They could have their own library, get a couple copies of Blue Mind, and then do a community read program. There's lots of ways that people, I think, can recognize and celebrate water. And really our event, we kind of, I don't want to say we sell out, but we sort of max out the use of that space. We get 500 or 600 people together. Some of them are DNR people. Some of them are local lake people. Some of them are university people. Some of them, like I said, are those private service providers and contractors. They all come together and we really fill up the space. It's at the Stevens Point Holiday Inn Convention Center, which is kind of on the edge of town. Parking is easy. The hotel is there because a lot of people do stay overnight. You can stay overnight, you know, Wednesday night and Thursday night. Those reservations for hotel rooms are open right now. We track with the hotel how are things going, and it's actually rooms are getting picked up faster than last year. So if you're hearing this and you're thinking that you might want to come, I'd recommend people at least make their hotel reservations. You could, of course, cancel them later on, but you can't. Once the hotel sells out, it's really hard to get into it.
Yeah. No, well said. Well, man, I'm excited. And I just typed into Google. If you want, you just type in Wisconsin Water Week. Everything will show up and all the notes will be in there. But Eric, to kind of round us out here, and any sort of final thoughts or a mic drop of sorts with a quote, a question, a comment, or anything else that you could leave us with here today around all things Wisconsin Water Week.
I think I'll try and paraphrase something that Lowell Klesig said, the way he culminated his research. He said that we need to have people who are sort of self-interested around lakes in order to contribute into the lake. So it's out of sort of a sense of almost selfish self-interest that I want my shoreland property to be great and I want my lake to be great. Those are the people then who make these investments of time, energy, and talent into those lakes. And so we're really fortunate to have, in our case, thousands of people who are self-interested about their lake, who then get together and help take care of our lakes. You know, we translate it from self-interest to community interest. And I think that model has to be replicated around so many issues around the world that we act based on self-interest, but in doing so, we start solving collective problems.
There's nothing wrong about being selfish, about being selfless. And kudos to Lowell for guiding that path and setting the roadmap for what we're talking about here today and all the continued great work that will happen in Wisconsin. So thank you, Lowell. Thank you, Eric. And thank you, everyone that within the Wisconsin UW Stevens Point and everyone organizing. So Eric, thank you for your time. And I look forward to seeing you in a few months here.
Sounds good. I look forward to it too, Kevin. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks for listening to the SDG Talks podcast. Make sure to check out all the show notes for relevant links from this show. Please share and follow SDG Talks on social media and stay tuned for updates from the Unleash in United Nations community.
The goal of the SDG Talks is to bring you good content. So if you want to learn about something specific or have suggestions, please let us know. We look forward to seeing you next time on SDG Talks.